Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. We'll talk trade, consolidation, and more in just a bit. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA took the first step toward possible reforms to the use of product of the USA on meat labels. A new proposal would limit the use of that term to products derived from livestock born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the United States. That's a change from current language, which allows the term on foreign-born meat processed in American facilities. The proposed rule covers beef, pork, poultry, and egg products, and will be open for public comment for 60 days. The product of the USA news was part of a broader set of competition-related announcements from USDA. The department also released a new report detailing competition in the seed industry. The report explores the state of the industry and also includes steps USDA plans to take to ensure competition. Those next steps include creating a liaison position at the department, forming a working group with U.S. patent officials, and developing a way for producers and seed retailers to report potential competition issues to the federal government. Finally, the Biden administration is taking another step that could lead to a dispute settlement panel over Mexico's plans to ban the importing of genetically modified corn. The U.S. is requesting technical consultations with the Mexican government under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack welcomed the news, saying Mexico's current biotechnology trajectory is not grounded in science. The development pits the U.S. against its second-largest corn market in a possible trade dispute. Before his time at NASDA, Ted McKinney was USDA's trade undersecretary during the Trump administration and was involved in USMCA negotiations. We asked him how the U.S. should balance Mexico's market power with its trade policies.
Well, I'll start with the USMCA. The way it was written, the rules that are there are perfect for allowing this to come to a successful conclusion. At least that's our hope. We'll see if people follow the rules. Balancing a trade, in terms of food and ag, Mexico desperately needs the corn in this case. Not just the yellow corn for animals, but I would say the white corn for tortillas and food products. So they've backed themselves in an unfortunate corner, and we are hopeful that they'll see the light and understand there's no problem at all in food safety with these biotech products. So this is what we're going to have to do through negotiation. We'll show our science. We'll see if they have any science. We don't think they do. We've asked many times. And I think it's going to come to a happy conclusion, but it has to. Otherwise, the Mexican ag economy is just going to be decimated with lack of or no food for their animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, expanding that look onto our trading partners with the European Union, you know, how are American officials going to be able to work with them to come to an understanding regarding their farm-to-fork movement? Sure. You know, is there a way that we can come together to on a consensus on that, or are our views just too far apart?
We have to keep trying and finding consensus, although that's a decades-long project with the EU. And they are our friends. Let's just get that out of the way first. But when it comes to food and ag, very difficult. Some of their objectives of the farm to fork, part of their Green Deal, are very good. We would have written them. As a farmer, we would have written them. As a government, we would have written them. So compliments to them. It's the tactics. No antibiotics ever. Thank you very much. Get rid of half of the pesticide MRLs, which are desperately needed by their farmers. Their farmers are telling them that, and all on deaf ears. So we're going to have to be patient. I admire Secretary Vilsack, USDA, USTR, for being patient. But there's got to be some change, because if they do that, they are on a very, very bad road. And the rest of the world completely disagrees with you. They are on the wrong track in this case.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we move to our farm bill discussion, I want to borrow on your time working in the seed industry.
Sure.
You know, USDA rolled out a report earlier this week that it wants to work with patent officials to monitor intellectual property concerns as new products are developed. How is this going to impact producers?
Well, the greatest risk is that when you start disrupting that system, you either add cost or you take away technologies, and we do not want that. We don't want that. I urge caution to the administration because I don't know that there is a boogeyman there. I don't know that there's a there. I guess we'll find out. But if they want to go pick on that industry, we got to remember there's only one major company in the U.S., U.S. based, that has that kind of property. So are we going to beat up on our own and then have little ability to address other foreign-owned companies? I don't know. I'm not so sure that they're looking for a problem that doesn't exist. I know that industry well. There are a lot of regional and smaller seed companies, and they can get access to those biotech traits and that IP if they wish. And it seems to me like it's working pretty well. So I would just urge caution not to take a very, very good system that's adding food for the world in a safe and efficacious manner, very efficient manner, and blow that system up. So that would be my caution to the administration.
We'll be right back with more from McKinney right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. The National Association of State Departments of Agriculture brings a unique perspective in the Farm Bill discussion because its members make up the Ag Commissioners and Secretaries across all of the United States. McKinney says given NASDA's reach across all geographies and differing opinions, the group still has unified priorities in the next Farm Bill.
We don't get so into the commodities like the Title I, which is where a lot of the arguments can rise. We are tending to focus on other things and let our friends in the commodity groups. So I think that takes away some of that tension that can come with regionality, one crop versus another crop, one critter versus another critter, so that's helped. So we focus on things that perhaps are more uniform. For example, we're very keen on additional funding for research. We're now slipping again, 5th, 6th, moving to 7th and 8th in the world in our dedication of general funding to research. We think that's one. Cybersecurity. We are a leader on the area of trade. And so these are areas that are uniform, can bring people together, do bring people together. And so those are areas that we're focusing on specific to Farm Bill. All the while, right there behind our commodity groups in full support of making sure there's a strong Title I, strong insurance component.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, politically, what needs to happen to move a farm bill on time?
Well, it's always called either the Holy Alliance or the Unholy Alliance because largely you have farm interests and all that goes with what we would know as the farm bill with all the nutrition interests, which is SNAP programs, the food stamps, the women, infants, and children, school feeding programs. And so I think it, though it's painful at times, it's good that those stay together. We must keep those together. That said, it's just going to have to be a discussion to bring us together. Many of our members would say they're concerned about some of this movement to just pay for all feeding programs. Pre-breakfast, breakfast, lunch, after school, weekends, summers for kids. That's a concern. And then all that goes with that. And that seems to be a little bit of the movement. They're absolutely in support of the partial payment, free or reduced program that we know so well because no one wants a child to go to school hungry or near hungry. So I think there's all the concern that's shared, but just turning it over and making it a mandate is a great concern. That said, the farm bill for farmers has slipped a little bit compared to other aspects of our government. So we've got to stay focused on keeping that strong as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, right before we wrap up here, I want to end our conversation with the Food and Drug Administration. They announced plans to reorganize the agency to focus a little bit more on food.
Yes.
But, you know, I want to know, where does NASDA stand on that current proposal?
Well, we're very, very deeply involved with our friends at FDA. Many people do not know that the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is all about making sure produce and feed are safe, is a collaboration. I mean, we work with them. We help on the training, and then we train up the states to implement that. So we are very deeply involved with our friends at FDA. We were encouraging a makeover, big time, absolutely, unabashedly. But I hope we did it and said it in a polite, respectful way as a partner would. We're glad that the report came out. We're glad that they're doing that, and we stand ready to help. We are vetting names that we will submit to the commissioner, a good guy, I believe, that they might consider for that deputy commissioner role that leads food. So we're doing that. But ultimately, we're going to be working them as partners to make sure they understand here's what the states need and here's what they don't need, and give them that feedback.
Ted McKinney, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson breaks down the titles of the Farm Bill in this week's Farm Bill Focus.
What is the Farm Bill? Over the next several weeks, we'll be walking you through various parts of the Farm Bill. The bill's 12 titles make up the most important piece of legislation for American agriculture, and Congress is due to reauthorize the 2018 version this year. Each bill is written for a five-year period, but sometimes Congress uses extensions of the existing law to give lawmakers more time to work with. This chart shows the Congressional Budget Office estimates of projected Farm Bill spending for the next 10 years, also known as the baseline. When lawmakers are writing the next Farm Bill, they'll need to stay within the $1.5 trillion budget parameters of the bill's expected costs, or find money from somewhere else to make up the difference. As you can see, nutrition spending accounts for more than 80% of the bill's mandatory spending. The bill's crop insurance title is the next largest piece of the Farm Bill pie, accounting for only 7% of the total. The bill also includes funding for conservation, commodity, and trade programs, among many other provisions critical to American agriculture. In future weeks, we'll walk you through what is covered throughout the bill's 12 titles. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to get into our panel discussion today. We are joined by farm policy consultant Ferd Hefner and Daniel Beck with Invariant. Thank you both for joining us today. Ferd, my first question's to you. There was a rally on Capitol Hill this week that was calling on Congress to implement more climate change solutions into the Farm Bill. But given the amount of funds that were allocated in the Inflation Reduction Act that passed Congress last year, what can you tell us, or what should we be watching for in this area as Congress begins to write the next Farm Bill?
Yeah, it was really great to see all the people gathered, all the farmers that came to town to rally for resilience. And it's really important that Congress protect the investment that was made in the Inflation Reduction Act for conservation to deal with climate-related issues, and figure out how to extend that and expand that funding. I think just in the last week, Farm Bureau came out with a really great analysis showing that there were over $21 billion in cropland and rangeland losses just in 2022. That's more than the total investment in conservation in the Inflation Reduction Act. So we're either going to figure out how to do this proactively and deal with climate in a proactive, farmer-friendly way by investing that Inflation Reduction Act money in climate change solutions, or we're going to continue to have the taxpayer pay outrageous amounts of money from extreme weather events that are going to just continue to hit agriculture. So it's an important issue. I think the rally really helped to center that discussion for Congress. And I think they made almost 200 congressional visits yesterday. So hopefully that did some good.
Mm-hmm. But with the recent IRA funding, what do you think is the willingness on Capitol Hill to make additional climate-related policy changes in the next farm bill?
Best answer I have is that if you take that Inflation Reduction Act money and make it part of the permanent farm bill conservation baseline, it greatly expands the total amount of money that will be available over time for climate solutions via conservation programs. And I think that's what Congress really needs to look at. And I know there'll be, you know, probably attempts to use and repurpose that money for other uses. And I think that should be resisted, strongly resisted by anybody that cares about having a resilient agriculture going forward. So I think that's the answer I would say is let's turn that into permanent farm bill baseline and have that money work for agriculture, for climate solutions over the long term.
And Danielle, bringing you into the conversation here, in your conversations with Republicans on Capitol Hill, what would you say is the appetite to move a farm bill?
I think that there is tremendous appetite across the board. You know, I have been pleasantly surprised. It's meet and greet season, right? Every new freshman that I've had the opportunity to visit with has been so thoughtful about how they're approaching the farm bill. They view GT as their leader and chairman. You know, they're very committed to getting a bill across the finish line. And even those off committee, I think they recognize the importance of a farm bill. You know, there are going to be some messy political debates that this Congress is going to have to navigate. But I'm feeling more optimistic today than I was even, you know, a week ago, let's say, about Republicans' ability to navigate those in the context of a farm bill to get it across the finish line.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved. Welcome back. Our panel continues with Invariant's Danielle Beck discussing the GOP's move on work requirements in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Oversight is going to be a key theme with House Republicans. You know, if you look at the budget meeting that's happening this morning in the House Agriculture Committee, I think that letter that the committee released in advance is pretty telling. You know, there's been a lot of conversation on conservation, what's going to happen with that IRA funding. Instead of outright saying they're going to rescind it or repurpose it, you know, GT's team wants to know what's happening with it. They want to really take a long, hard look at the effectiveness. I think the same goes for those nutrition programs. What's working? What isn't working? In terms of programmatic sustainability, that applies to the nutrition area as well, but I hope that it will be done in a thoughtful manner, figuring out ways that we can empower people while still meaningfully addressing hunger in this nation.
Mm-hmm. And let's wrap up today's conversation talking about the recent competition news. So, Danielle, USDA is proposing changes to the requirements around the voluntary product of the USA labeling claim. You know, can this be done without upsetting our trading partners?
It's a voluntary claim. You know, born, raised, and harvested in the USA can be used now under what USDA is proposing if it's compliant with, you know, the standards that they set forward. There's been a long debate about product of USA labeling, mandatory country of origin labeling, for that matter. I think there are two schools of thought, right? Consumer education, providing accurate information so that consumers are empowered to make informed purchasing decisions, and then marketing claims that bolster the bottom dollar that producers are seeing take home in profitability. Product of USA labeling is one of those where the ambiguous structure that's currently in place is a disservice to producers and consumers alike. Hopefully moving forward, we can begin to really hone in on those conversations relative to labeling schemes that will deliver more information. I mean, the local movement is not about born, raised, and harvested in the United States. It's where exactly is my food coming from, because I want to support, you know, the pork producer or the cattle producer that's down the street or in my home state. And there are ways to get those schemes tilted up that really deliver on profitability back to producers, you know, the consumers are looking to support.
Mm-hmm. And Ferd, you know, USDA released a report earlier this week on seed competition in the seed industry. How do you expect this report and USDA's plans or steps it plans to take to influence competition in this area?
The thing I'm particularly focused on in terms of the upcoming Farm Bill is it was the last recommendation in the report related to how to reinvest in public plant breeding and animal breeding. And that's going to be the topic of an upcoming set of bills that will be introduced soon in Congress to really try to reinvest the public research dollars that are needed into basic classical plant breeding and animal breeding, in part, for many reasons, but in part to deal with regional adaptation to extreme weather events and climate change. If we're going to have farming systems that are resilient in the future, we need to be doing our public breeding work to address those issues. And we can't really get there from where we're at today. So it's really going to be an important topic. I mean, there's an important topic overall in reinvesting in public research in agriculture overall. And this is, I think, a very important subset of that bigger topic, which is reinvesting in public plant breeding. So I think the report will give some important legs to that discussion as bills get introduced for the Farm Bill.
Well, there's a lot to keep an eye on in the upcoming weeks and with the upcoming Farm Bill. Thank you both for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson introduces a Missouri freshman on the House Ag Committee in this week's Meet the Lawmaker.
After 35 years as a TV news anchor, Representative Mark Alford decided to run for Congress in Missouri's 4th District. We sat down with Alford in a Meet the Lawmaker interview to discuss his priorities as one of the newest members of the House Ag Committee, including using rural broadband to improve farm country.
People are not going to be attracted to those areas unless they can do a modern day family, and that includes high speed internet. So we're going to be working with others to try to get money into these districts and all parts of rural America to try to really do what we did in the 1930s with electricity, to make sure back then that every farm and every home had electricity. We want to make sure that every farm has every house has a equal playing field to where people can be successful and prosperous and help move our country forward.
Alford shares more about his background and why he's an advocate for mental health awareness. You can watch his full interview at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to influence legislation and investment decisions as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The next Consumer Price Index will be released on Tuesday. The House Ag Committee will host a Wednesday listening session on the Farm Bill in Waco, Texas. And don't forget about our upcoming AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit coming up Monday, March 20th. As always, we'll have the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Thanks for joining us.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.